This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and sometimes I feel bad about that. Do you ever feel bad about who you are? Do you ever feel bad about things you've said? Do you ever feel bad about things you've done? Ever since I was young, I remember always feeling bad about things. But it has helped me be a better person, I believe, because I can't be late for things. I can't let people down because I'm going to feel too bad. I've tried to teach that to my kids, Hudson and Harper, who are 10 and 11 years old. And I've tried to show them that their actions affect others, especially with respect to the teams they play on. They both play on a lot of teams, baseball and softball and basketball and other sports, hockey. And they don't seem to understand that when they don't come to a practice or if they don't get to the practice on time, that they're letting people down. And I'm the opposite. I just feel bad that I am letting people down. I don't know if you feel that way or not. And I think my kids are improving, and I'm really happy to see that they're identifying with my feelings about not letting people down, having responsibility, and being there for others. But the problem is that I'm so hard on myself. Sometimes I can't sleep because of the decisions I make. And I make a lot of really important decisions. As a trial attorney, you have no idea how many decisions have to be made during a day that can go one way or another and affect people, their life, their livelihood, their well-being. Decisions affect others. The decisions you make are so important. Yet I feel terrible when I make bad decisions, and I've made so many bad ones. I don't know about you, but I have made a lot of bad decisions, even though I put so much thought into the decisions I make. I need to learn how to handle this better because it's really harmful. It's stressful. And that's why I'm looking so forward now to speaking to our guest today, Dr. Judith Orloff, who's a psychiatrist, a New York Times best-selling author. She's been featured on The Today Show, CNN, Oprah Magazine, New York Times, USA Today, and a host of other media, spoken at TEDx. And she is an expert on empathy, empaths, which we'll talk about, surviving as an empath. She integrates conventional medicine with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, empathy, energy, medicine, and spirituality. Her recent book, Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, sensitive being another word for feeling bad. I use the simplistic legal term, feeling bad versus sensitive self. Your relationships and your world. That's part of the title of the book. The foreword is written by the Dalai Lama, which we'll talk about. And it has gotten incredible reviews. I can read a couple here. The Genius of Empathy by psychiatrist Judith Orloff is needed now more than ever. Our world's empathy deficit has robbed so many people of their health and happiness. This book is an uplifting guide to help heal our minds, soothe our nervous systems, and reconnect us to each other. Highly recommended. And that's by Dr. Daniel Amen, a New York Times best-selling author. Change your brain every day. Here's another interesting review by a reader. The Genius of Empathy by Judith Orloff is a life-changing force of intelligence, compassion, and astounding power for the individual becoming their best self all the way through the greater world. As with all of her books, Orloff's brilliant insights and wonderful writing are motivating, encouraging, and visionary. I cannot say enough good things about this book, as I'm sure so many have said about her other books. I need to address my feeling bad, and I'm so excited right now to introduce you all to Dr. Judith Orloff. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Tell us about this situation of empaths. And am I an empath?
Well, I'd have to talk to you more. There's a self-assessment test in the book, Are You an Empath? And there are questions that you can take to figure out if you are an empath. And an empath is somebody who doesn't have the same filters that other people do, and so they tend to feel things really intensely, and they're very deeply empathic, as you're describing yourself. But they tend to take on the world's problems or other people's emotions, or are very hard on themselves. And so that's why empathy is so important in terms of self-empathy. You know, that's part of what empathy means. It's not only having empathy with your spouse, with your children, with your friends, with the world, but it's about yourself, which is often, ironically, the hardest thing to do.
But is it a negative or a positive? I'm grappling with the conflict because I agree with everything you've said. And for me, it's really helped me be successful. And it's helped me being successful with my relationships. But at the same time, it seems to almost be harming my ability to function on a daily basis.
Yes, well, that's the quandary of an empath, is how can you be empathic without overdoing it or taking on the stress of the world or taking on too much responsibility for other people or for decisions? You can do the best that you can, and then you need to let it go. And I think it's just a balance issue for you. That's what it sounds like. If you have a big heart and you care and you want your decisions to be, you know, good ones, but you don't want to be a perfectionist and you don't want to get in the habit of beating yourself up in the middle of the night. And that's where empathy comes in, where instead of beating yourself up so it hurts you, you can substitute that with more kindness towards yourself and say, I did the best I could. I made the best decision I could. That's all I can do. And to say positive things about yourself in the middle of the night. And you have the power to shift your thinking with this. But I think sometimes, you know, it has to do with upbringing and messages from parents at a young age. And one of the principles I talk about in The Genius of Empathy is that it's not our job to fix people. You know, we can be there for others, but there's a limitation. Others have to do some of the work themselves. And it sounds like, by the way, that you're really educating your family beautifully about empathy and what it means. So I just want to say I was impressed with that.
Well, I think it's really important, and everything you're saying is so important. When you think about others, I think you enrich your character and your life. But a lot of times, people have other things that get in the way. Maybe it's their upbringing, or maybe it's their insecurities, or maybe it's resentment and anger. How do you approach that where someone just can't seem to get out of their own way to understand these concepts that you're talking about?
Well, you have to realize that having empathy is not something you have to force yourself to do. It's only if you want to do it, if it interests you. Even, you know, if you're listening to the show and you're slightly curious about how empathy can improve your relationships with your spouse or your children, coworkers, then you could begin to try and practice it. But you need to learn how to set boundaries with it. I want to make clear that empathy, as I'm defining it in the book, doesn't mean having empathy for people 24 hours a day or being on call for your friends 24 hours a day. That isn't what being an empathic person means. Part of being an empathic person means practicing more self-care, taking some time out, learning if you're in an argument with somebody, let's say you're arguing with your spouse, you have to take a pause rather than say things that you know you'll regret. And so these are shifts that you can make in yourself at the same time as not seeing yourself as everybody's savior, because that will only burn yourself out. I'm a psychiatrist, and I'm also an empath at the private practice here in Los Angeles. And I've been practicing for many, many years. And I've had to learn as a psychiatrist how to set boundaries, you know, with my own empathy so I can be there for my patients without overreacting to, you know, what they're going through, over-identifying with what they're going through. And so it's a balance.
It's interesting because I think what you're saying is that you have to address your own shortcomings before you can be truly empathetic in a positive way for others. So how do you stop beating yourself up? How do you become more perceptive? Because a lot of people just aren't very perceptive. They're not open mm-hmm. to what you're talking about for their own shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they don't have to be as far as I'm concerned, but that's true. My way has never been to convince anybody of anything. I mean, but if you want to lead an extraordinary life, and you want to break this horrible pattern we have in the world of blaming and shaming and polarizing and dividing people, if you want to live a different kind of way, empathy is your chance to do that. And I want to just make clear, it's not about having empathy for an abuser, their abusing acts, you know, or anything that people have done to hurt you. But I'm a big fan of letting go of resentments, because that gives you more of a lightness of being. So what allows you to let go of resentments? Having even the slightest bit of empathy for the shortcomings that cause them to hurt you so much. And you're having empathy for their wounded parts, not the action against you. So it's very different. And the result is you don't think about them as much. They float away. You're not telling the same stories over and over again about how they hurt you. And so it's your freedom, but it's a bit counterintuitive, but once you try it, you'll see what I'm talking about. And, you know, as people age, they don't want to be carrying around, you know, lots and lots of resentments. It's just, you know, they become bitter. Their faces aren't beautiful anymore. They just become consumed, you know, with the resentments, and that's not how you want to live.
No.
You know, it's up to you. I mean, you can live that way, but empathy is a way out. And so it's worth practicing as far as I'm concerned.
Now, as a psychiatrist, your life's work obviously has involved human beings, the human condition, brain, and emotions, and everything else that comes part of that, being a psychiatrist. When you look back and think about all the people you've treated, who you've counseled, you've talked to, why is it when you use the word blame and shame and you use the resentments and anger, why is it, and I know it's not a simple answer or even one answer, but why is it that so many people have all of these resentments, angers, blaming and shaming that prevent them from truly becoming an empath?
Well, I think it's how we've been brought up, and I think it's our education. Most people don't have the kind of parents who don't blame and shame and who are nurturing and support you in a very positive way or support your empathy. Most of us didn't have that. And so you have to start as an adult to develop those patterns. And so it's very important that you know, that you learn how to shift your upbringing so you can be the person you are meant to be. You don't have to be, you know, just kind of extensions of who your parents are or the messages they gave you, if they blamed and shamed you, or if you were an empath. You know, there are empaths are often called crybabies, or they're bullied, or what's wrong with you, you're too sensitive. They're given all these kinds of blaming, shaming messages that are not true, but they can do damage. And so I'm here to say, I want you to celebrate your empathy and that those messages are not true that you were given. If your parents blamed and shamed you for being a sensitive, loving person, a boy or a girl, or, you know, it's just so important to be able to find your own way as an adult and separate from that kind of messaging as a child, because it's not true. It's not who you are.
You know,
you're a beautiful, sensitive, empathic person.
I think the tough part is not the realization of your upbringing per se, but being able to put the anger about that aside. And that's where, you know, people in the heat of the moment in crises, they seem to forget that their objective to maybe be an empath or their goal of treating people right and nicely is lost because of that underlying anger and resentment that comes out, especially during fights, you know, disagreements, things going a different way than they would like. How do you address that?
Well, I just want to say that anger is very natural. That's the first stage of reacting. Of course you're angry about certain things. You know, of course you're angry about being blamed and shamed. However, you want to make a choice not to perpetuate that dysfunctional pattern. No, you have to make the choice. You have to be the one to say, I'm not going to be doing that. I'm angry. Yes, but there's nothing I could do to change that. Plus, this is very important, that being a victim to anything depletes your power. And so it will behoove you to try and empower yourself rather than keep going over the injustices of your childhood as much as your anger is deserved. I don't want to say to anyone out there that they shouldn't be angry. You know, they have every right to be angry. You just don't want to let that anger rule you. You want to create a different reality for your children, you know, for your loved ones. You don't want to keep perpetuating that anger. You know, it's not a healthy thing for a family or an individual. But it is real. I'm not taking away the, you know, the feeling and the you are justified in being angry, but you could come from a different place, you know, about it when you can deal with the people in your world today.
You know, I think that's such an important message, and that's the message found in The Genius of Empathy. Excuse me. One reader wrote about this subject that you're talking about. I reclaimed my power to embrace my authentic self without guilt or shame. Thank you, Dr. Judith Orloff, for providing actionable steps that helped me pave the way to releasing the need to always be right, to let go of shame about feeling different than others, and to discard the notion of who others told me to be. Now, in the book, you give practical steps and, as this person calls them, actionable steps so that people can address these, I guess we could call them, shortcomings. Tell us how you were able to put these actionable steps into place in the book so that people like this reader could feel that they reclaimed their power to be themselves without guilt and shame.
Yeah, so in the book, I wanted to present very simple techniques that are simple to apply and that you can practice. They're not hard. You don't have to think too hard about it. You just have to try to do it. And then you see the relief from it. For instance, you can have empathy with somebody you don't like. You know, it's a misconception that just because you don't like somebody, it doesn't mean that you can't treat them with respect. You know, who we like personally is very subjective. And I think it's important to respect all people. If I don't like someone, it's what I call the namaste effect, where in India, you know, a lot of people say, I respect the spirit within you, might not like you, but I respect the spirit within you, namaste. And I believe in that, that you don't have to like somebody, but, you know, you can say, let's say they offer unsolicited advice, which is incredibly irritating to most people.
Right.
You know, when they don't ask for advice,
right,
they're given this unsolicited advice. You know, you have to be the bigger person and say, you know, I'll take that under consideration. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. You know, but give them, I hear you, as opposed to arguing with them or getting back at them or seeking revenge or talking to your friends about them. You know, just simply say that. Be in your power when you're with them instead of not.
And I don't disagree with that at all, because I subscribe to that, and I'm trying to teach my kids to understand that, because I really cannot stand kids who are judgmental. And, you know, if my kids come home from school, and thankfully they're not this way, but I know a lot of kids. I coach baseball and softball, my son and daughter, and you hear these kids that are just really denigrating and criticizing other kids. My kids don't do that because they're a little bit shy in that regard, but it really bothers me when they do. So I completely agree with what you're saying, that you can be polite and you can be professional about things without having to get into it with someone else and move on with your life. Having said that, though, there is a school of thought amongst psychiatrists, psychologists, that say if someone has really wronged you and you just put it aside, you just kind of say, oh, that's okay, that it can have a detrimental effect on your own being, that it just becomes so frustrating to you that you gave in or you, you know, allowed them to get the better of you. And that can weigh on you in such a way that maybe, you know, being that kind of empath disturbs your homeostasis or your well-being. How do you address that?
Well, I agree with those psychiatrists. It's never okay for somebody to hurt you or disrespect you. It's never okay. You don't want to take that away from yourself or be, it's called emotional bypassing, where you don't allow yourself the feelings of that. It's not okay, but you want to come from a bigger place so you don't get hooked in to this wound mate reaction, which is you're just connected through your wounds and your hurt. No, in order to free yourself from any interaction, yes, you know, you're going to have all these, you know, or occasionally people who hurt you, and it's not okay. However, you still want to, you know, say something like, you know, I hear what you said, I'll give it some consideration and back off. You don't want to be emotionally triggered with these people. If you take a look around at the world today, you have to ask yourself, do you want to be like these people? I mean, take a look. They're all over. Narcissists are all over
right. The
place. Do you want to be like these people? Do you want your kids to be like these people? Do you want your relationship to mimic these people's relationship? You know, I doubt it.
Yeah, no, I think
we don't have a lot of models.
I think you're right about that. The foreword of the book is written by the Dalai Lama. How did that come about? Because that's a real high praise for someone so well-respected that the Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso, the 14th Dalai Lama, would actually write the foreword and be so supportive of your book.
Yes, well, the Dalai Lama has always been one of my heroes in terms of how I want to be in the world. And so I consider him like a member of my family, though I don't know him. You know, I feel so close to him. And so I submitted the book many months before publication to his office. And I got a note many months later. His Holiness finds this book very promising, and he wants to write a foreword to it. And I'm you know, it's one of those times
wow.
in life where
wow.
you go, oh, my God. You know?
Not what you expected.
So, I didn't. I was neutral. I didn't, you know, the chances of this or, you know, but not
well,
so great.
I think you probably was hopeful that he would write a comment that you could put on the back of the book. But to write the foreword, that's amazing.
That's exactly right. And it's interesting because I only asked for a comment.
Yeah,
and
then look what you got, and you know his comment, his forward. I'm not going to read it here, but it's so you know well thought out and thoughtful that it really provides a great preface for what the readers are going to read in The Genius of Empathy. So I think that you know you couldn't have gotten anyone better regarding the subject that you want to talk about. In our last minute here, Dr. Orloff, please tell us how people can get the book. I know they can get it wherever they get their books, but tell us a bit about how you would like to see people read The Genius of Empathy and buy the book.
Yes, the book is available on my website, drjudithorloff.com, O-R-L-O-F-F.com. And, of course, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, you know, anywhere you want to buy a book online or the hardcover. And you can find my workshop schedule, my book tour schedule on my website as well. And how I like people to read the book, you can go to any chapter that you resonate with. Go to self-empathy. Go to letting go of resentment. And go to healing yourself with.
All right, Dr. Orloff, thanks so much for being with us here on Gervie's Law today.
You're very welcome.
That's going to do it for our show today. We'll see you next week.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.